All right, so who are you?
I'm Joe DiCarlo.
What do you do?
I'm an architect at Turner Broadcasting.
And tell me, what is an architect at Turner Broadcasting? I've gotten to interview a couple of you guys, architects at Turner. What do y'all do? What do you draw pictures of?
Well, there's a lot of different aspects to it, and there's actually different types of architects. You have the enterprise level, and you have solutions architects and business architects and the different various roles. I personally am a solutions architect, so my role is to work with the solutions team, help choose the right technologies to go forward with a particular project, see that project from beginning to end. So
you do like technology assessments, or do you actually recommend like, here we see like WCF, that seems like a good fit, we'll use that. How do y'all do assessments? How do you base choice technology?
Sure, so we assess the level of skills on the team, trying to fit that with current technologies, plus take the business requirements that we have for the particular project and the needs that it has, and trying to fit that into the overall schema of the other projects that we have in the field in our department, so we can introduce, service orientation aspects of it and be able to have it be a piece of the puzzle of the entire pie.
There's a question at different organizations if architects matter. How do you see you're in the middle of that in a major enterprise organization. How do you see? Do architects matter?
Sure, I think so. I think that the relevance of architecture is becoming more known today. I think architecture used to be this whole thing where you get to be a senior developer, and then the next logical progression is a title change to architecture, but not necessarily a role change. And I think we're recognizing more and more in the last 10 years what architecture really does mean, what that role plays. I think that there are definitely methodologies like XP, Agile, that like totally don't need architecture because of the way they go. But for most things, you have to have those planning. You have to have that overseeing and that drive. An architect drives that project from start to completion, and that's kind of the role it plays.
All right. So, admittedly, I've known you for a little while and saw you kind of progress from what was more of a developer role up to the architect. How did you do that? Where did you see yourself do that mental switch where you were less interested in day-to-day writing code and helping to drive the enterprise to make the right decisions?
It is definitely a mental context switch, and it's a different skill set. And a lot of people think it's a progressive skill set to go from developer to architect, but it's a different skill set altogether. So it's something that you could even do without necessarily being a developer first. That's my personal opinion. I don't know if I...
Oh, good story there, real quick. So do you think that you can be an architect without ever being a developer?
I think that is actually possible, but I think it's a different complete role. I think that it's definitely helpful. But you could also go from like a PM to being an architect, because that solution architect kind of sits in both worlds. It sits into, okay, I got to do project management and deal with the business and understand to speak the language of the business, but I also need to be able to speak the language of architects and need to be able to speak the language of other developers. And so you have to be multilingual in that sense.
Valuable skill set to be able to translate business requirements over to the technical requirements.
Absolutely. And so being able to live in both worlds. There's no strong requirement to come from the developer world to be that, because you can come from the business world and have the desire and the skill to be able to pick up that technical knowledge that you need to be able to speak that language just as well. So you have to sit in the middle. So whichever direction you come from, I don't think really matters that much.
Okay, and you've also been extremely active in this new, it's not really new now, but the architecture certification. Tell us a little, what is that certified architect thing?
Okay, so the Microsoft Certified Architect is a Microsoft-sponsored but vendor-agnostic certification. So it's not a Microsoft certification as most of Microsoft certifications are thought of. So like an MCSE or MCSD or whatever the new one's, MCPD.
I don't go to New Horizons, take a test.
Yeah, it's not a test like that. In fact, it's quite different. It requires a certain level of experience, provable experience, and certain role that you play. And whenever you go through the process, it's actually you sit in front of a board of other MCAs, and you get graded, if you will, by those MCAs by basically a two-hour board.
And is, out of that, how many folks do y'all have that are like not Microsoft?
So you're only allowed to have, I think it's no more, I think the rule is no more than two Microsoft people on a board of four.
Is that Microsoft employees?
Employees.
What about people with non-Microsoft backgrounds?
Oh, absolutely. It's a vendor agnostic certification. So in fact, you rarely have trouble with people who are not from Microsoft having this problem. It's the people from Microsoft typically have the problem with knowing so much about the Microsoft stack and not knowing enough about the non-Microsoft stack, because there's seven core competencies that you need to have and show proof that you have, you're competent in these seven areas. And one of those is technology breadth, and that means knowing the different stacks across different vendors and being able to go with a vendor agnostic, vendor neutral approach. And so, in fact, a lot of Microsoft people have that problem because they're typically consultants for Microsoft, so they're there doing Microsoft. They're asked to come to represent Microsoft and do Microsoft platforms and the Microsoft stack, and so they don't get enough experience with the non-Microsoft stack, and so that actually hurts them, and they need to actually do extra work to find out those other things.
So that's cool. So I guess kind of on that same vein then, does that say that you have a guy from like with a very strong Sun Unix background?
Sure.
And he could be Microsoft certified architect.
Absolutely.
Without really having much experience on Microsoft.
No experience on the Microsoft side.
He needs
to be a vendor
like
neutral. So he would need to know competitors in his space. And so what he's going there, he would need to know competitors in the space that he's doing. And that competitor doesn't necessarily need to be Microsoft.
Okay, and let's say that I have a very strong at-plat type background. I don't necessarily know much about infrastructure. I certainly can't design an entire subnet networking scheme. I can't compute an IP.
Exactly.
Are those kind of things that people need to know? They need to know everything about like structured area network storage or...
No,
storage area network. I just said that wrong too.
Right. So at the end of the day, there's two types of architects that the certification is currently certifying. So we recognize that there's other types of architects. There's the enterprise architect that's going to be more on the business side, less on the technical side. I'm going to be able to speak the architect speak, but less of the developer speak. And there's going to be application architects that are more developer-centric and less business-centric. We're not certifying those types of architects currently, and I don't know if there's plans to in the future, but currently it's only solutions and infrastructure architects, which are kind of in that middle. And so to answer your question is, I don't need to know the specifics of that infrastructure side. What I need to know is the information and how to communicate with an infrastructure architect as a solution architect, as I am, to be able to communicate the needs that I have for him and be able to answer the needs that they had, that an infrastructure architect would have needs for solutions. So there's that knowing enough about it to be able to understand what I need to give them or get back from them, but not necessarily needing to know the details.
And y'all at Turner, y'all had been using a lot of team system in the past.
Sure,
right?
We still do. Mm-hmm.
Do y'all use like the work items to be able to manage that?
Absolutely, we do scenarios and work items, and we are able. And so, we strive that. excuse me. So we take, we take our feature. We're doing feature-driven development currently on the team I'm on. So we take the features and we extrapolate scenarios from those features, and then take those scenarios and extrapolate work items from those. And the basic install doesn't have this, but we went and added, because it's very flexible what you can add. So we went and added to our scenarios estimations, so we can put our estimations directly in there, report off of those. So we do our estimations and be able to put actuals versus estimated and work. So if we have scenarios that maybe drive that float to the next iteration, we're able to also put a third field in there that's the remaining work left, so we don't have to try to guess how much work is left for this iteration, because our iterations right now are 2 weeks.
Well, cool. In the previous podcast that we did with Don Browning and Peter Provost, they kind of lightly touched on this, that y'all don't really use Gantt charts.
No, not at all.
Not at all. All right, explain that. That's a monumental concept, especially for a lot of people that are maybe watching this from a project management background, where they're taught that you manage everything off the Gantt chart. And even a lot of the Microsoft demos that we show is how you use Microsoft Project and driving team system from Project, which has an innate kind of Gantt chart view in it. How do you manage that? How do you manage your time? How do you manage the project? How do you know if it's on time, on budget? What does that look like?
Okay, so there's definitely planning to go. You know, Agile has a little different of a philosophy than your traditional waterfall approaches. So we recognize that there are business needs that may drive a date. And so in those business needs that drive a date, we try to give a high level estimation of whether what we'd be able to get to in that to that date, but we don't drive to that date like a waterfall approach where we'd be taking that date, splitting it out between we're starting now
managing
with analysis.
This one's dependent on this one, therefore.
Exactly, that's... and then trying to split it all up like a pie and figure out how much time you're actually going to have for development and going for it that way. It doesn't work that way. We have kind of many life cycles versus one huge life cycle. And so we do an iterative approach, and in that we let the customer drive it. And so a lot of times in a waterfall approach, let's just take an average enterprise application, usually spans a year or longer. And so, and because of that, your customer often says, well, what will I need? I know what I need today, but since I'm not getting this for a year, what am I going to need a year from now? So they're trying to predict features that they may need, or they think they may need a year from now, which is just guesswork at that point. And so I heard some pretty startling statistics about the amount of features that get in the waterfall that are never used. And I don't remember exactly what that statistic is, so I'm not going to try to quote it. But at the end of the day, this kind of prevents that. So when you go with an Agile approach, you let the customer drive what features need to come first and how that works. And since it's an iterative approach, and you have things automated to make that, you're able to do that via some automation continuous integration, automated unit testing, and things like that help you drive that iterative approach, you're able to deliver at a regular basis. And since you're able to deliver at a regular basis, the customer is able to see it earlier than at the end of the project. So they're able to now have immediate feedback and responsiveness to what's there. They can say, okay, this isn't working the way I expected, or now that I see this, there's a whole other idea I never thought of, and is able to prioritize that feature with the existing features that you came out to begin with. And then if you have a new feature come in, then you can make that discussion of, well, if you want this feature, we have to drop this feature. And so if the date slips, there's an immediate, immediately why, because you're doing it at the time that you're getting a result at the same time as the cause, which is not true in waterfall.
How much is that? If you're baking test-driven development, feature-driven development, how much is that? Have y'all seen that reduces failed product? I mean, the previous podcast, Don said that this kind of change at Turner was driven from one big old failed Gantt-driven project. How much has that changed towards success?
Okay, so we have only currently one project that we've taken an Agile approach that's actually completed. Okay, and it's in production, and it was a 2.5 year big budget project. I mean, very mission critical project. And
y'all use WCF all over the place?
Yeah, used WCF on it. We used Team System. We used WCF when Indigo may not even been called Indigo. I mean, it was early. So we completed that. We missed our deadline by, I think it was 6 weeks, which is phenomenal for a 2.5 year project, if you ask me. There's not too many waterfall projects that you could say that.
Having worked with some of the customers that we both worked with, that's actually phenomenal.
Yeah, and so, and we knew that we're going to miss it by 6 weeks, 6 months before that 6 week miss. So it wasn't that we missed it by 6 weeks at the end. We knew 6 weeks ahead of time we needed to adjust our date by 6 weeks, and we hit that new adjusted date.
No, wait, So that would drive a lot of the project management kind of folks nuts. They would say, this is the date, you have to do the date. So given that kind of mindset, what would you have done? You cut features, added people?
So definitely with this, there's not a whole lot of
Fred Brooks reference here, right?
Right. So there's not a whole lot of scope that gets introduced like in Waterfall. Because you have the ability since you're dealing with things in such a small increment of time, right? So we were at the top, most of this project, we were 3 week iterations. And so they gave us basically 9 development days. So you know, it's very easy to estimate for a developer what he can get done in 9 days versus what he can get done in a year. And so it's just logical, right? So, and because of that, you're able to say, okay, I know what I can get done and what I can't get done in these time frames. And that allows you to actually easily figure out what's going to miss and what's not going to miss way ahead of time. And so, and using TFS allowed us to track real time what features are actually getting completed and what percentages those were getting completed, because we were able to break it down in work items like we discussed a few minutes ago.
Right.
And that had a percentage of completion. So you don't have a project manager spending all of their time going to developer, okay, tell me percentage 80, you know, you're guessing, right? So this is not exactly at all what we were doing. You actually have hard evidence saying, okay, this is the feature, this is the task that the feature was broken up to, and those tasks were small tasks. And then these are the percentage of tasks that are done, so theoretically this percentage of that feature is this percentage done. Now that's not necessarily true, 100% true, but it gives you more of a accurate feeling than just some off the top of your head guess that we've always had to deal with in the past.
So the pretty cool thing, out of our discussion, is that you're an architect at an enterprise company with pretty huge responsibilities over a very huge project, and you're also very involved with the Microsoft Certified Architect Group, and that a lot of what you talked about with y'all, Turner's specific use of team system and feature-driven development isn't really centered around that you can only do this with team system and Microsoft products. Is just general approach.
Oh, it's absolutely.
So how much of that bleeds over to, I guess, the MCA, your experience with the MCA? How much are you able to look and see, you know, help on, like, doing certification boards that, even if they're not using team system, but what type of things and processes are they using? Do you focus on that part?
Sure. So on the MCA board, everything is vendor agnostic. As a matter of fact, I just sat on a board last week, and I don't remember team system being brought up once. Now, Agile had been brought up several times, but team system was never brought up once. Not that say it doesn't have a place, or I'm not trying to down team system. I'm just trying to say how vendor neutral that whole space is.
Right.
We try not to talk about products specifically, but technologies.
And so as architecture should be, right?
Absolutely.
Architecture should be not taking a platform specific approach first. They should find the needs of the business based on the current availability of resources and mapping those, right?
Right. So I'm not going to talk about Silverlight and Flash. I'm going to talk about that technology that's underneath the covers.
Very cool. So, where can our watchers, listeners, where can they find out more about the MCA process and find out just more about what is the MCA?
I don't know the URL off the top of my head, but it's on the Microsoft Learning site. So if you go on Microsoft Learning, there's an MCA bullet there.
You just gave me one edit in here. Thanks. Just kidding. Okay, and we'll just say that. Okay, Joe, thank you very much for taking some time out here at the Visual Studio and SQL and what else are we launching today? Server 2008 launch here in Atlanta. Right. So thank you very much, Joe. we'll go WAS, right? IIS 7, it's a way of the future.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Joe.
All right, thank you.